We're here again.
We're here again.
And we're gonna...
Notes.
So many notes. And also wine.
We've got wine.
And we have got wine.
It might not be the wisest film to be drinking wine on.
Or is it? Because we are going to
or
be...
we need it.
Serious today.
We are going to be... Well...
We're going to try.
We are going to tackle
no.
more serious
okay,
film.
Let's... So, we are going to try to podcast about a film that is of a serious nature.
Slightly more serious than the other two films that...
Just a scotch.
A little teeny tiny bit.
A little teeny... We, however...
The opposite side of the coin, even.
Cannot be serious. Oh. So, who knows what's going to happen?
Just... I mean, you know, just go along. It'll be fine.
Buckle
It'll
up. Fine. It's going to be a hell of a ride. Hi, and welcome to If This Film Taught Us Anything, a fortnightly podcast by her, Lorraine Wheatcroft,
and her, Xenia McIntosh,
where we talk about films, what we learn from films, and discuss the many, many questions that pop up along the way.
And we'll play some ridiculous games, get sidetracked, and by the way, there will be spoilers.
So if you haven't seen what we're talking about, come back when you have.
Just come back when you have. Come back later. Taught us anything, and this week we are talking about Black Klansman, aren't we, Xenia?
We are talking about Black Klansman, Lorraine, and we went to see that a couple of days ago.
2 days ago, yes.
So we have given ourselves processing time, which is something that we've learned.
Yeah.
And
this film did need a lot more digesting than our normal sort of film.
But I think it's fair to say that we both really enjoyed this film.
Yes, we did both enjoy this film.
But we have things to say.
Yes. And
they may or may not fit into the If This Film Taught Us Anything format.
Yeah, there are some things that I definitely have learned.
However, there are some things that I have to say.
Yeah, just want to talk about.
We'll see how this goes, because we've got no idea, to be honest. I'm not going to lie, this could be a shit show.
This could be an absolute travesty.
But it might be genius. Honestly.
Do you know what I doubt it's going to be?
Right. So, anyway. Lorraine, did this film teach you anything?
This film taught me a lot.
What is one thing that this film taught you anything?
One thing this film taught me, I think if we should start small. Let's start small and easy, because this is going to ramp up to some issues.
It really is. So also, that's worth saying.
Yeah.
If you are not ready to talk about race relations or portrayal of women.
Yeah.
Or police.
Yeah.
Then this episode is probably not for you.
Mm.
Also, if you don't want to talk about or think about anything, any of those things, this podcast.
Yeah, whole podcast out for you.
With that said,
nice little start.
Let's ease ourselves in.
I learned that Denzel Washington's son, who I should actually call by his proper name, John David Washington, sounds exactly like his dad. Like, ridiculously, he's a doppelganger completely of him. But also, I recognise Denzel Washington's voice really well.
I do not know what to do with any of that information, because
I know it's not a thing, but I've really thought about it a lot.
Can you have...
They've got a Denzel channel on Sky at the minute, so I've watched quite a lot of Denzel. So.
Do you... Can you have... What?
They've got a Denzel channel on Sky Movies at the minute.
Okay. Is it possible to have an audio doppelganger? Is that a thing?
Yes. Yes, of course it is. I sound a lot like my mum.
What does the word doppelganger mean?
You're double.
Is that all it means?
Yeah.
It's a very fancy word for... Just
yeah.
Double.
Because I'm fancy.
Okay. So, just... Okay.
That's it. That's
it just
one...
means double.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's,
so...
And that's my...
You're saying that Denzel's...
thing I learned.
Son.
Yeah.
John.
John David Washington, yeah. Also...
Is Denzel's voice
so
doppelganger.
So, Denzel ever can't be there, they could get him in to do the voice.
Right. And to be clear, when we were in the cinema, You also said he was his tooth doppelganger.
He has, yeah, they've got the same front teeth. But what, I mean, obviously he's going to look like him because...
Now, see, you say obviously, and that may or may not be true. But the thing is, I will never know because I'm face blind.
That's true, you cannot see.
I cannot.
Faces.
See, I mean, I can see them.
I mean,
when they're in front of me.
I thought I was face blind, but you're bad.
I'm proper face blind. Like, if I was waiting for Denzel at an airport,
really?
Or his son, sure.
Are you really going to follow this? You're going to follow that? Okay.
Okay.
I wouldn't even recognise Denzel Washington. Is that what you were literally going to say?
I would. Okay. As people came towards me, I would question whether any one of the people that was coming towards me was Denzel Washington. Whether that was a small white woman.
Yeah.
Or a Chinese man.
Do you remember that one day at the cinema I said hello to an Asian lady in a wheelchair because I thought she was you.
So there's a chance that you're also face blind. But what I'm saying, so I have no clue whether John David Washington looks like Denzel Washington.
He does, but he looks like a perfect morph. You know that weird put your two photos in and these are what your kids look like?
Right.
Just sort of shit internet things you get. He looks like Denzel.
Do you remember when you thought we could keep this clean?
The point was that, no, we're not going to swear. Uh-uh. I'm going to keep it clean because people like to listen in their cars when their children are there.
What I'm saying is that even if he was his double, I would not know because I'm face blind, especially not if I was in an airport waiting for either one of them. Let's imagine a world where that's a thing. I'm in an airport waiting for Denzel Washington.
Or John David Washington.
Wouldn't have a clue. But also, beards.
What about them?
So because John David Washington is sporting a beard, sure, sporting. Beryl. That was... pure Beryl. Because John David Washington is sporting a beard in this, that confuses the fuck out of me.
Yeah.
And I don't know who anyone looks like.
Because they've got a beard on their face.
Because they just all look really attractive.
Yeah, did we speak about this already on the podcast about how men really should be forced to shave before you go out of them for any
Yes,
time?
we haven't talked about it on the podcast, but you and I have talked about this because...
Yeah.
Beards make everybody more attractive. I don't know about women, but they make all men more attractive because they can hide a multitude of sins.
Yeah.
And you don't know what you're getting into.
Yeah. That is out of order.
Yeah.
The few years that Paul was doing the knowledge and had to shave his beard off and was... And I knew him beardless. Well. Yeah. It's not like I've met him and he had a full beard. But then he had one for a really, really long time and then... did the knowledge and had to go to like the appearances and talk to and had to take his beard off because that's one of the rules.
Take it off
right. Like, hang it up on the side. But it was just, those were really stressful 3 years. I didn't like it.
Yeah, so there should be a law that if you meet a beardy man,
he has to take the beard off yeah,
and hang it up before things get too serious.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, they think fucking makeup is magic, don't they? Men are like...
Oh, and they don't... Yeah, they
that's
do.
That's false advertising. Like,
beards,
people are born
beards are
like
the
that.
Worst false advertising. The worst.
That you can pretty much guarantee if someone's got shiny purple lips, that's not
That's
natural.
Not right. And also a cat eye.
Yeah.
Probably weren't born that way. But a beard, definitely born that way. I've lost track of my own point. Moving on.
So, did this film teach you anything, Xenia?
If this film taught me anything, it taught me that I don't understand about Adam Driver.
Explain your Adam Driver aversion.
It's not so much an aversion, because in this film, he was the most appealing that he has ever been.
Yeah.
And... I do recognise that in every episode, Lorraine goes, oh, no, I wouldn't. And I go, oh, I would.
Yeah.
And that is not what's happening here.
No. I mean, I wouldn't.
Neither would I. But if I had to line up all the Adam Drivers, this is the one that I would.
Oh. No. I mean...
Okay.
I would definitely... Oh. No, he's very weird. I mean, he's generally a peculiar person. Then he looks a little bit odd.
Yeah.
And then in the second Star Wars, they made him look really, really odd.
Really strange.
But in the first one...
Really weird.
He looked really weird, but he didn't look...
Weird.
He didn't
weird.
Look weird. He looked weird.
Weird.
Was he peculiar?
He was weird.
I can't see people.
No, stop it, because we've just that whole segment on how you can see them.
No, but I can't. I cannot judge on the attractiveness of the person.
I know that about you because you don't understand anyone's attractiveness. No, the Rock, no, attractive.
No, I mean, he is. I'm not saying he isn't, but I'm saying that he is.
We are trying to be serious and we've got sidetracked by The Rock in the middle of Black Panther.
Sidetracked by The Rock a lot. We should just do a podcast.
We should do a Rock special. Anyway, Adam Driver. So if you had to line up all the Adam Drivers,
yes,
which Adam Driver would you?
I think you're correct, but I may be very, very last season Girls Adam Driver.
Okay.
And I mean, I wasn't a big Girls fan, so I saw the last couple. But yeah, he was okay in that.
Okay.
Because they normalised him up a bit, didn't they?
Yeah. I don't know. I just felt like he retained some of his Adam Driver.
I think there's something I've seen him in other than Black Klansman lately, and there has been something. There has been something, but not Star Wars. Other than Star Wars, there was a thing he was in that he was relatively normal.
So would you rather Adam Driver...
Oh, we're getting in early.
...in a lumberjack shirt.
Oh, yeah.
Or Adam Driver in a super high-waisted pant.
Oh, that's not even a question. You can't compare the two. Definitely the flannel shirt.
But he's only wearing a flannel shirt.
That's fine. That is fine.
No pads. Got them no trousers.
Padded pants on and that weird expanse of chest. Oh, so odd. Oh, I just felt like putting a cardigan on him.
So if this film taught me anything, it taught me I really don't understand about Adam Driver. I really don't. And he gets it compared a lot as well to Keanu Reeves.
Oh, God, does he?
Yeah, no. He really does.
I know, I get it, but...
Do you?
No, I get why they do it, but that is just purely on his peculiarness and how Keanu used to be.
No, it's on how they look.
No,
it's literally side by side of their two faces. Do they look? He looks like Keanu Reeves, and I don't see it, but that could be the face blindness.
Actually, see, we've not talked about Keanu yet, and if we did... Then we would see who gets climbed like a tree. I wouldn't climb like a tree. That's out of order. It's really nice. And we would do nice things.
And one of the nice things you would do would be climbing him like a tree.
No.
What if he wanted you to?
No, we'd go and rescue some animals first.
And then?
Maybe some tree climbing.
There we go. So, that was one of my first lessons of film. Yeah. Back to you.
So, if this one taught me anything, it's that however serious a film is, it should have a little dance.
Should it?
In there, yes.
Should it?
Yeah. I really enjoyed, there's a club sequence in Black Klansman where it's choreographed. It's a very 70s dance thing anyway, isn't it, to do a choreographed dance?
Also true. Soul Train. It was a bit Soul Train.
And I think that's more of a, you know, we don't do that now, do we? I don't know, do people? I haven't been in the club in 20 years.
Apparently Fortnite has brought the dance battle back.
What?
The computer game Fortnite is mostly about battling to the death, but also... dance battles are a thing within it.
Huh.
Yeah. And there are many, many people. I wish I hadn't said that like I was doing air quotes around it, like people, who are now doing dance battles because of Fortnite. So I think the dance battle is back.
So you think if we go into a...
I'm not saying that at all. I'm not saying that if we went to any sort of club, they would be standing in two lines facing each other dance battling. That is not what I'm saying.
It is very much... There's two lines of people. The soundtrack is great. This film's got an amazing soundtrack. And it's... obviously, it would have. Spike Lee films always got amazing soundtracks. And it's a club scene. So it would be weird if it didn't have a really good thing going on. And there's two lines, and it's that whole dancing down the middle thing and doing a little thing. That's what they do. They're coming down the middle of the thing, doing a little thing, and then going off to the sides. And it's like, I miss it, for one. I mean, I've never seen it in person. I've never done it.
You miss it?
Yeah. I, for one, miss dancing in 1972.
Right.
In any film now, I want a little a little club sequence where there's a dance.
And you said no matter how serious.
Yeah, no matter how serious.
Okay.
Schindler's List. Philadelphia.
Malcolm X.
Sophie's Choice.
Oh my God.
I don't know many serious films because I did not
I'm
watch
I'm literally
it.
Sitting here racking my brain for serious films.
A really
12
sad
Years a Slave.
Yeah, and what's
and
the
who
one?
Would do the Love dancing story. In 12 Years a Slave? Slaves or?
No, it would be in
the Would it be slaves versus they go to a club?
Someone would go to a club and there'd be a little dance thing.
In 12 Years a Slave.
Yeah.
Right, okay. Or Time Traveller's Wife.
Oh, Time Traveller's Wife dance sequence would have done that a world of good.
Anything would have done that a world, you know.
It's a shame because the book was so good.
I don't know if I agree that any film, no matter how serious, because that's the other thing. I don't know if we want to get into this just yet, but that's the other thing that is genius about this film.
Mm-hmm.
Is that if this film taught me anything, it's that you can take really, really very serious subject matter and still make it really very comedic.
Oh, it was hilarious.
By leaning into the absurdity of people's terrible beliefs.
Yeah.
And this film
really took it.
Yeah, it really leans into how absurd anyone with extreme views is, really. And runs with that.
It's very funny. And because you see it all from the beginning, like even the interview at the beginning that Ron's in,
mm-hmm.
and because you're watching him being interviewed, you're watching him watching the interview, sort of.
Yeah.
His face, just through it, it's just from that second onwards, that's hilarious, that interview.
Yeah.
And it's him just sort of going like, what the fuck is this?
Yes.
So is that your, is this taught you anything?
It's one that I'm saying. I don't even know what I'm saying. It's a thing that this film taught me.
Definitely.
Because
I think you have to be quite, it's very deftly handled, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like there isn't one point where the comedy part tramples a serious bit.
No, not at all.
Or it's too quick after. Actually, no, there are a couple of bits where it's very quick after a serious bit, but brilliantly timed.
But it also doesn't, I didn't feel like the comedy was ever used to lighten the subject matter. It was never.
Never, not once.
The subject matter was never played for laughs.
Yeah.
But it was funny. Like, it's a funny film.
And that's a really clever thing to do.
Yeah. Which does bring me on to my next thing, which isn't really so much a thing that this film taught me as a question that I have as a result of this film.
I have a couple of questions.
Which is Topher Grace.
Yeah.
I just have questions because he's brilliant in this, I think. I think.
He's very, well.
But I don't know if he is.
I think he did very well in the role. Because he plays David Duke. I think he was good and he did well in the role and he kept it, like, he kept him horrible.
He really did.
But he really was still only Eric.
He really was. And I don't really understand the part where Topher Grace is a grown-up.
No, he's never grown up. He looks like a child.
And he's not. He's a grown man with children, I believe.
Oh, that must just look like little hymns.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Doppelgangers, if you
little like. Doppelgangers. Sound like him and got his teeth.
Stop it. So I don't really know what I think about Topher Grace. I think I really like the left field casting of Topher Grace as David Duke because it's not something that anybody would have seen coming.
Actually, although when he popped up in the film, when it was like, this is, you know, he phones, phones David Duke, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
It really took me out of it for a second.
Right.
I totally went like, that's
Eric.
Grace, that's Eric, that's not. And then it was back to normal really quickly.
Right.
Back into it very quickly, but I didn't, there was a second where it was very jarring. I found it very jarring.
I don't know if I had that experience, but I don't know if I was ever not watching Topher Grace playing David Duke.
Yeah, there was some very obvious acting.
Yeah.
Is that what I mean? I only learned about acting a few weeks ago. So
during the Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Everywhere.
Podcast, in fact.
I think it's a shame because everybody else was like, you know, it was a shame that that snapped me out of it when everybody else was good. And it's not.
But I don't know that if he wasn't good. Or if it was,
that's unfair to say where everybody else was good and he wasn't, but where everybody else didn't wasn't jarring. So maybe it was a little bit of miscasting.
But this is where I have questions rather than a thing this film taught me, because I genuinely have no idea whether or not he was good.
Yeah.
And whether or not I liked him in the role. But talking about it with you now, I realise that I was never watching David Duke. I was always watching Topher Grace as David Duke.
You couldn't invest in him.
No.
In it.
No.
And the bit when Flip Zimmerman goes for initiation, and they're in that, you know, underground, the crypt, and David Duke at the front is doing his bit with his robes on, his arms in the air and doing a prayer and everything. I did not like that. I like him that in that. I just thought, weak, you've not pulled that off.
Right.
There's not the...
Okay.
And that sequence, that whole sequence was so strong.
Yeah.
And so sort of powerful.
But is that because it was deliberately to make David Duke seem...
Oh, seem a bit...
weak and insipid, and actually this is the man who so many of these people have galvanized and rallied behind, and actually he's this and he's nothing. Is it deliberate?
Well, this was something that I was going to talk about after we get into our serious lessons, or my one serious lesson, that for me, tonally, the film was a little bit all over the place, not in the comedy part, but in the bit where it was like, have they cast Topher Grace so that David Duke seems insipid, when actually, and he plays evil good as well. It's not like he isn't a nasty person while he's doing it, but it sort of takes away a little bit of the fear, when you should be more worried about that person.
But that brings me on to a later point. Let's stop.
Yes, that's what we're going to have to stop. This, so, that's a serious point.
So what we're saying is we have questions about Topher Grace.
And we are going to get onto these things.
Now, speaking of Topher Grace... If this film taught me anything, it taught me a black woman.
Yeah.
How black people talk.
Oh, could you explain how black people talk, please?
So there is a phone call that takes place between Ron Stallworth and David Duke. And Ron Stallworth says, have you ever worried that you're going to be infiltrated by a black man, or like...
you're going to be talking to
That you're going to be talking to a black man on the phone. Topher Grace, not Topher Grace, David Duke, I do understand the difference. David Duke's response is, well, no, because you can tell the difference between a white man and a black man on the phone. So Ron Stallworth rightly says, how? And the response is basically, because white men speak English and black men... don't.
No.
There is also, there's another reference to this in the film.
Yeah.
Where Ron Stallworth has to go undercover, and the policeman, his line manager, says...
That's how the police work, exactly.
Says, you're not going to be able to pull this off. And he's like, no, all black men know how to talk as we should, and also how to talk jive.
Jive, yeah.
So there's that already. There's a name for that. Code switching. So there's already that, where that's basically what's being referred to is that all black men, all black people know how to code switch. However, the way that David Duke does it is just genius.
Brilliant.
Because he basically says, because black men say "ar," like are.
I'm sold.
The Grand High Wizard. What the fuck?
That's just the one word. Does that... Well, like, you can't think of anything
Ara.
Else. And they show him really thinking about it as well. All
really
the words.
Really thinking.
Everything he could say. Ara.
And as a black woman, it was interesting to hear how I sound.
Yeah, well, in case... Had you not known this about yourself, even?
Know that I say Ara.
We don't call you posh kid for nothing.
Is that what you call me?
I do.
Do you?
I've called you posh kid to your face.
I don't always listen when you speak.
That's obvious. hurtful as well.
But there is then a wonderful payoff scene for all of that nonsense at the end.
Oh my God, that is the end scene with Ron on
so
the phone.
So spoilers.
It is a big spoiler.
Yeah, that at the end they are on the phone and he reveals himself to David Duke.
Yeah.
And he talks jive and it is just...
But he reels off as well the whole list of every single racial slur.
Yes.
That he literally reads it from a... notebook.
Yeah.
It's everything that he's written down. And then says, Ara, over and over again.
And he goes full jive is the only way to describe it. Now, I can't do accents and Lorraine is banned. So we're not going to do it.
No.
But it is genius and it is worth watching. That scene alone is genius.
It's really funny.
And I will say that in that scene, Topher Grace's facial expressions are brilliant.
Yeah.
As the sudden realisation, the dawning of what is happening.
And I think all the laughing as well is really genuine.
Yeah. But yeah, it was interesting to learn from this film how I and my family speak.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just surprised you didn't know.
Didn't have a clue. Sometimes. Lorraine, right. Did this film teach you anything?
I have learned from this film because we've got into the habit of sitting through credits of films now.
Yeah.
We saw the little production films and the Monkey Paw one.
Yes.
Jordan Peele's company of the little hands stirring the tea.
Yes.
I love that. But I've learned from just being delighted seeing all these little production company IDs that I've watched 2 hours of those.
Yeah, and we watched a different film this week, and I realised I learnt, not from this one so much, but from that one, that I will watch...
You should probably say what that film is.
Okay, so we also watched Searching this week. We're not going to podcast it because there isn't much to say, but I'm going to shoehorn this bit of learning into the middle of this podcast randomly. I learnt that I will watch somebody retrieving a password... for really quite a long time.
So
oddly mesmerised by the most ridiculous things.
It's hypnotic. But I think what it means is actually we need things about 30 seconds long. Slightly repetitive.
Yeah. Production company logos, people typing into a screen, literally just a cursor moving across a screen with a tap, tap, tap noise.
Yeah.
I find that like...
I was like overly happy. I mean, the film ends... quite strongly, let's say, powerfully.
I didn't cry.
What?
I didn't cry.
I just got, it was the, I think it was the switch for me. I really loved the actual ending with Ron and Patrice. I was like, yes, that's a proper 70s gun-toting sort of thing.
Can I have a confession?
Yeah.
Hated it.
Did you?
Yeah.
This is my thing about the stylistic stuff being why it is Inglourious Basterds rather than Malcolm X.
So my problem with it...
about this right now.
No. My problem with that as an ending was I don't really like Spike Lee films.
Yeah.
And I think that if this film hadn't been advertised as a comedy, I don't know that I'd have gone to see it, if I'm honest. And having said that, because you... and Kelly wanted to go and see it, I probably would have, but it wouldn't have been something that I was I would have said, I want to go see it.
Yeah.
Which is a conversation that I was then having in the car on the way home, that we went to see it with another friend of ours, and she was saying she didn't know how she felt about the comedy.
Yeah.
And I said, I thought it was brilliant and really well done, and I thought it was a really good thing. I think the fact that it was a comedy will draw more people in to it, because I don't think I would have gone to see it. I don't think I would have wanted to go see it.
I know exactly what you mean.
Especially because it's a Spike Lee film and I historically do not like Spike Lee films. I don't like his style. Like,
I like his style in that now, obviously now seeing other films by people like Edgar Wright and Quentin Tarantino, you realise how much of his style has been stolen.
Don't like Quentin Tarantino either.
Then that's probably why.
Yeah.
Or one of the many reasons. But, and I remember, like, obviously from his first few films, because they were, you know, they were at the end of my teen years.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, Do the Right Thing was a massive thing. So I think, but I wouldn't say, I would never say I'm a Spike Lee fan.
Right.
Like, I wouldn't go out my way to see his stuff. This, for me... yes, it was a comedy, but also that it was set in the 70s, the whole cop blaxploitation thing, which I love those films, and I love them stylistically, which he did. He did all the little cuts walking through a forest and all that. Mm-hmm, the films always have them. And, like, the whole Ron doing his kung fu stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
That was just lovely. And the bit in the club and all of that. So that was why I liked that. Or yeah. Why I wanted to see it. And that was, otherwise it would have been a DVD for me, if I'm honest.
Yeah. Yeah, which kind of does bring me on to my next learning point. So, and again, if you are not here to talk about race relations or blackness,
we've eased you in
any of that stuff, this is possibly not for you. You may or may not have picked up that I am a black woman.
That you are.
Thanks for the confirmation. Lorraine is not a black woman.
That I am not.
Again, thanks for the confirmation.
I've got to say something serious. I've got to be...
And also, Kelly, who we also went to see this with, is not a black woman either.
No.
I was acutely aware of being a black person in the cinema.
Yes.
Because I don't think this film was for me. Which
no, I agree.
Is... interesting because it was made by Spike Lee. It's a Jordan Peele production.
Yeah.
And yet I felt my blackness every inch of the way.
Yeah.
And also felt your whiteness.
Yeah.
And I don't normally, when I'm with my people, with my friends, like, I don't spend a lot of time looking at you going, oh, you're white. And also, if... no, I've never looked at you. never looked at you and thought you're white.
But it's not like we haven't seen difficult films
no,
before.
Not
we
at all.
We've seen Get Out many times together.
So many times. Black Panther, I understand that's not a...
No, but you know. Yeah, but it's a... It is a point, it's a film point that could have caused that feeling.
But if this film taught me anything, it taught me that this film was not for me. Actually, I don't think I'm the intended audience. And I don't quite know how I feel about that, if I'm honest.
Boots Riley, who is a filmmaker who's made Sorry to Bother You, which hasn't got distributed in Britain yet, which is a sort of a thing, you know. This film has been distributed, Sorry to Bother You hasn't.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's a bit problematic. But he wrote a long form tweet, mini essay thing about the problems he had with BlacKkKlansman. I agree with them 100%, actually. But
I agree with them 90%.
But I still, what did you, what, hang on, sorry about the paper, because I'm going to look at the bits I pulled out. Because basically the gist of his thing is that, Spike Lee was paid $200,000 at some point in the recent past, I think even the beginning of this year, to consult on some NYPD adverts.
Mm-hmm.
And he feels that this is an extension of that.
Right.
And when you look at it in that light, you can definitely see that there is a bias on the police being heroes. And
however,
yeah,
if this was supposed to be a further advertisement for the police, I don't think it worked.
No, this is my point. This is why I agree, although I agree
I know
with
it's those, your point. I just thought I'd steal it.
Yeah, you can have it.
Go
it's yours,
for it,
you know.
Then, go.
But what the, I, although I agree
you,
with him,
you
I
agree
think
with
that,
Boots, do you?
I agree with Boots, right. Yeah, me and Boots, you know. I just think that what has happened with the intent and impact thing, the intent might have been exactly what I said to further the police propaganda thing. I don't think that worked. But also, it maybe if you're at different stages in your education on social justice and racial things, it's going to affect you in different ways.
Racial things?
Racial things.
Right.
The whole gamut
of racial things, right.
Okay. So one of the, this was my last, what I learned serious point, was that at some point in the past, I would have watched this completely differently. Not that long ago, actually. You know, I'm very old, so... time is different.
She's not very old.
Ancient. But I would have definitely at some point been not, I'm not going to say yay police, because I've never in my life been yay police.
I have. As a black woman,
yeah.
I'm totes yay police.
You know, I've, that's, and that's,
I was
not
recently
how,
in New York, never felt more yay police in my life.
How was that?
Great.
But,
It was actually great, but not yay police.
But I would have been more like they've really come through for them in this film. It really does paint them in a good light. And I think at some point...
I don't know if that's what I took from it.
But what, not even when they arrest Landers in the there's a horrible sequence where Ron's girlfriend, or she wasn't his girlfriend at the point in the film, but basically they pull over a car, the police pull over a car that is filled with a black activist, Kwame Ture, and Patrice, who ends up as Ron's girlfriend.
Ish.
Yeah. So, and basically the police are abusive and they sort of sexually abuse Patrice. It's not like anything too horrific, but it's bad, you know. Mm-hmm. And then later on, at the end of the film,
yeah,
it all comes right and they've recorded this bloke, this policeman, confessing, and isn't it great? And the sheriff rushes over and they're like, and now we've got you. And it's like Scooby-Doo.
That is, but then also he's made to destroy all his evidence of his...
Yes.
Of his investigation into the KKK, yeah. And he is... Like, they're not sure what to do with him and he'll go back to narcotics. And
yeah.
So I don't know if it was yay police,
to be honest. What I mean about it being tonally strange, because you've got that bit, this Scooby-Doo, we got the bad cops, aren't we all great? Then you've got that bit where it's like, you can't do any more investigation into KKK and we are burning the evidence. And then there's the other bit of everybody knowing that Landers is a terrible cop who probably shot someone.
Yeah. Murdered someone.
Yeah, he murdered a black kid, but they don't say anything about it because they're family.
Yeah.
And it's the way the racism is handled, or the police, specifically the police's white supremacy problem, is tonally weird.
I didn't think it was tonally weird. I thought it was fairly consistently shit.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't find that jarring. I found that totally expected and totally the only bit I found jarring was the fact that they then bothered to arrest Landers.
That's the bit that I think is tonally odd. The rest of it seems
consistent.
That is weird. Yeah. It's like, did you just shoehorn that in because someone watched it and went, dude, you haven't said enough about how great the police are? Can you put something in about how great the police are? That seemed odd. And it was only after... like reading the Boots Riley stuff afterwards, that I thought, oh, that's why that was weird. Because of the proper, it might have been to do with that stuff.
But this is the part where I only agree with him 90%. Because he was saying that this was kind of police propaganda and Spike Lee, and an extension of Spike Lee's advertisements for the NYPD.
Yeah.
And I didn't see it like that at all, because I don't think the police are portrayed in a particularly positive light. Yeah, at any point in this film, I feel like the only point at which they are portrayed in a positive light is literally during that scene where Landers is arrested. Like, I feel like if he was busy trying to show the police in a positive light, when Ron Stallworth was averting the bombing, and he was shouting, like, I'm a police officer, they would have listened, and it wouldn't have taken his white partner coming along and being like, he's police, here's my badge, for them to lay off. Like, I don't think at any point in this were the police really the good guys. Like, Ron Stallworth is portrayed as a good guy because it's from his autobiography. That's the other thing.
Yeah, and that is one of the problems that is in the essay, that it's a very fictionalized version of even his memoir, which is going to be from his point of view.
Yeah.
So and there are some massive points that have changed.
So he is portrayed as a hero.
Yeah.
But also, he created this whole investigation out of something that nobody wanted to investigate.
Yeah.
And therefore, for me, the police were never the heroes in this.
That's what... And this is why I think the film was made for white people.
Right.
And even in a sort of, hey, come along and watch a film with the cool kids kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to get people going and be like, yeah, I'm a good white guy. Definitely from that. And that's what I'm saying about at some point in my education, I'd have been that person going, I'm such a good white guy. Because, like, I'm not one of those. Yeah. I'm just so great.
And that I hear and that I agree with, I don't mean but agree then... with. I don't know that I ever thought you weren't a good white guy. I don't quite know what I'm trying to say. but All of that point I see, I take on board, I hear you. But the idea that this film is police propaganda, I don't see, because I don't see a particularly positive portrayal of the police in this for me.
No, and I am slightly more tinfoil hat conspiracy person than you are.
Okay.
So I do look for tinfoil hat slightly. Conspiracy type thing.
Slightly.
Slightly. A little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
A tiny, teeny bit. And as well, you have Patrice in it, who is constantly the voice of anti-police.
Going, yeah.
You can't be the police and be pro-black. You can't be an activist and even talk to policemen, because he hides it from her for most of the film.
And then she won't
it's just great.
Go for it.
When she finds out that he's a policeman, she just basically shines him on. It's like, no, in all conscience, I can't do this. And he's shocked. It's like, dude, she has been telling you all the way through the film, she ain't going to go anywhere with a policeman.
And then she doesn't. And I think it's brilliant.
And she sticks to it. And that is that's a really strong point, that she really sticks to her thing. But then that is right at the end, and it's ruined by the ending that I liked, the stylistic.
What, the two of them going into the night to fight the KKK?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, and that's the part of the film I didn't like, because that's the part of the film that is so Spike.
That is.
Me.
It's
Spike.
I don't even know if it is.
Lee.
Stan Lee.
Stan.
Who made this film? Spike Lee. Spike Lee. I was trying really hard not to say Spike Jones, and then got sidetracked into nonsense.
Yeah, and I think, for me, that brings me on to another point, that if this film taught me anything, it taught me that I don't mind watching fake history.
Yeah.
As long as I know that it's fake history.
Mm-hmm.
So the Boots Riley essay goes quite hard on the fact that it's not true, that there are some really clearly verifiable things that did not happen.
And I think my problem I have with the things that didn't happen, obviously I only found out about them retrospectively, is that it was big things like his partner wasn't Jewish.
Yeah.
Flip Zimmerman wasn't Jewish. And that is such a massive plot point of his turning from being, why, I wasn't even brought up Jewish, I don't care, nobody cares, to him then being a Nazi hater because I am actually Jewish.
Yeah.
That's such a big point.
That wasn't. The beginning where he goes to infiltrate the student union, the black student union rally around Kwame Ture.
Yeah.
That didn't happen. That's not
never met him.
Never met him.
And he'd infiltrated them for
three years. Yeah, he'd been working. Because actually, there was never a point at which Ron Stallworth was working to destabilise the KKK. Even when he was doing this investigation, it was never to destabilise, to disrupt the KKK.
Yeah.
But he did work for 3 years to destabilise and disrupt black radical organisations.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the big thrust of the Boots Riley essay.
Yeah.
Now, I hear all of that. What I have learnt about myself is that I don't need a film, a book, whatever, to be historically accurate, as long as I know it's not historically accurate.
Yeah.
And I don't know that this ever said that it was. Full disclosure, we did miss the first 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So it may have said that this was a fictionalised version of events, but I haven't read that anywhere. I haven't seen that anywhere. Nothing suggests that this film is portraying itself, it's advertising itself as a fictionalised version of events. So this film is saying this is what really happened. And as an entertaining think piece about a black guy who infiltrated the KKK, it's a very, very entertaining film.
Yeah.
And I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
As a film based on actual facts, that's a piece of shit.
Well, this is my thing. I think this is why the stylistic stuff is important, because it is presented as, it's presented as a 70s cop film. It's like, you know, it is Shaft and that sort of thing. And that stylistic stuff is more similar to Inglourious Basterds, which is about, you know, is a wish fulfillment on killing Hitler. Mm-hmm. And I think this is wish fulfillment stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it isn't Malcolm X and it isn't 12 Years a Slave. It is a stylized version of some stuff that someone thought the story was called. Jordan Peele went to Spike Lee and he had never heard the story.
Right.
And he gave the book to Spike Lee and said, this is really cool, you should read it.
And it is. And it's a really cool story.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's based on his autobiography, which is however factual it is, fine.
Yeah.
As an entertaining film about a thing that sort of happened that we're going to fictionalise, I just absolutely loved it. So that's kind of why I only agree with Boots Riley 90%, because it's a film. It's an entertaining film. And it's been made for entertainment purposes. And it was already, it's not a documentary.
How long? It was like 2 hours, 15 minutes long. So it was quite a long film anyway.
Did not feel like that.
Didn't feel like that at all. But, I mean, how long have you got in a film to tell a story? And the same thing was levelled at, well, the same accusations were levelled at Straight Outta Compton, that they didn't tackle
Dre's
domestic abuse and stuff like that, domestic violence. But it's like, well,
we can't do everything.
Yeah, and they also didn't tackle Easy E getting AIDS, and then, well, that's a story that definitely should be told.
Mm-hmm.
Although my thing with Straight Outta Compton is that that's at least 5 films and they squeezed it all into one. You know, there's a lot, and can't possibly do it. And that's, I think that's what that suffers from. You cannot tackle the story, the issues, relate it to now, because Spike Lee makes, there's a lot of effort in dragging the points to be relevant to now. Like, there are literal conversations where they look at you like, you know, there's almost,
we're just going to break the fourth wall now.
And, you know, and good.
Yeah.
And then the end is entirely sort of documentary footage.
Yes. And the end is jarring and terrible and
it's shocking.
Horrific.
Absolutely horrific.
What I found interesting was that you and Kelly had a much more visceral reaction to that than I did.
Yeah, it was that basically it shows the cars going into the crowds at Charlottesville.
But also the rally at Charlottesville. Like, it starts with the rally at Charlottesville.
With the rally,
Then it's Trump talking about Charlottesville and then all of that.
Yeah, and basically it was all like, it starts you off angry, you know, because you're left angry at the end of the film anyway because the Klan didn't get, you know, they didn't get rid of the Klan completely out of the town. And then the first thing you see are rallies now, like the Tiki Torch rallies. And then it is the documentary footage of cars being hit, like smashing people up.
Yeah.
And it's horrible.
It is. But I think for me, if this film taught me anything, it taught me that for me, I don't need to see that in a film because we're already fucked. Everything's fucked. The world's going to hell in a handbasket. Racism, is that supposed to be news? Welcome to my life. Like,
and it is, it's like, we did, like, we know that happened, because I really thought about why I had a strong reaction to it. When I'm a, it's not like I don't see horrific films and things a lot.
And I was really surprised by the fact that I didn't have an emotional reaction, because seriously, cried in Toy Story 3.
I know, it was, you're far more squeamish than me.
I cry at the drop of a hat, and I didn't, and yet you and Kelly were both crying on either side of me, and I really had to sort of take a moment to try and work out why. And I think it's because I've had to numb myself. I've had to, in order to walk around in this skin.
I've even seen that footage before.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not, and I didn't have that reaction then, other than, oh my God, that's horrible.
Yeah.
I didn't have that reaction
because
then.
Because I think for me, I'm just resigned to, fuck this shit, we're still here.
Yeah.
Like, this film is set in the 70s, and yet, still. But I've stopped asking, still?
Yeah.
And I know that, yeah, fuck it, still. Like, yeah. And they've come out of the dark again.
Oh, yeah. I don't know what, I was literally still thinking about before we started this and what to say. And I don't know if I could, I don't know if I can name it. Because it's not like, I can't say,
Trevor?
Steve. This feeling is Damien. I don't know. Darren.
Wayne. This feeling is Wayne.
Wayne. And it's definitely not like, like, again, like I said, you know, I'm going through an educational process intentionally doing things about unpacking privilege and looking at white supremacy and what you can do about it and where you stand in it. And so it is, it probably was, that's going to be a large part of it. That seeing that is,
you're not like, speaking in sentences, so I don't know what you're saying.
No, because it's really hard. I know, because
we don't know what this feeling is called. We think it might be called Wayne, but... Yeah,
and I'm very bad at processing feelings because I am a screamer and a puncher.
Right.
I generally only cry when I'm really frustrated.
Okay.
Sad and stuff doesn't really do it.
Okay.
It does tend to be angry and frustrated.
That kind of makes sense, though. So angry and frustrated.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. Apparently I can process feelings.
There we go. That makes a lot of sense, though.
Yeah.
Whereas for me, I don't cry when I'm resigned.
Yeah.
And I'm just resigned. I'm resigned to this is the world in which we live. So it didn't make me have an emotional reaction because what's new?
Yeah. And I hope, like, because obviously it's not your place to be angry and frustrated.
I can be angry and frustrated if I want.
Be angry and frustrated. Like, I'm not taking your agency away.
What are you trying to say, though? I interrupted you, as is my wont. Beryl. So much Beryl this evening. I don't know if it's the wine or the film, to be honest.
I think it's more important for me to keep up the anger and frustration if I'm going to be a proper anti-racist than, you know, letting... black people keep being angry and frustrated again.
Oh, I can't be angry and frustrated because then I get pigeonholed as the angry black woman.
Well, of course, yeah, exactly. That's the thing, yeah. Those are the words that I would have used if I'd had them.
But I took them from you.
Out of my mouth.
And put them in my own mouth. And then I said them. Another thing. That... Again, it's totes political. Oh, shit. I feel like we lose it slightly by saying things like totes political. But in the car on the way home, we were having a conversation.
You and Kelly.
Myself and Kelly were having a conversation about Felix's wife.
Yes.
In this film. And we were processing.
Yeah.
So Felix's wife in this film is portrayed as a larger white lady.
Yeah.
And she is very much white people. In this film. And Kelly was having some difficulty with the portrayal of that woman. I believe from when I reported the conversation with you, it's a similar difficulty to something that you had.
Yeah.
What was the difficulty?
My difficulty was that she was portrayed as a fat lady
mm-hmm.
when there was no need, because they had signified she was a lovely, homely person by having her in an apron, and she was very huggy and she was making food for everybody. So they portrayed her as a nurturing, stuck her in an apron.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I believe that's why she was fat as well.
Completely.
And it's just like, I don't think we're at a point where there's enough positive fat characters to then go, okay, we'll just have one then. But also, because it's really nice to have a fat villain.
There we go.
And they didn't make, nobody mentioned it.
No. So there we go. That's exactly where we...
You played me.
Played you like a fiddle.
Like a violin.
Mm. For me, that was the point of her.
Well, she's now my favourite fat person in films.
Her weight is never mentioned.
No.
She has
a sexual relationship with her husband, which is like never shown.
No. And she is a homemaker, and she's also somewhat ridiculous. She's bumbling. She is laughy, smiley.
Yeah,
she's a homemaker. And for me, that's the point of that character, is to show just how insidious evil can be. Because she
they do that well.
Evil.
Yeah. Oh, she's the worst.
Their pillow talk is... Her talking about how long he has been promising that they will blow up some black people.
She pushes totally.
Yeah.
She pushes for Patrice to be the target.
Yeah.
She gives them, she comes into one of the chapter meetings and gives them an article about Patrice specifically, and is like, get that bitch, literally.
Yeah.
And it's brilliant.
I found it interesting that I had such an opposite reaction to that character to both of you.
Yeah.
Because like I said, for me, that was the whole point of that character. But the other problem that I had, that the focus was, why is this woman fat? But it just, for me, was frustrating that even in this film, that was about all of these other issues,
that come first.
That was one of the earliest and one of the first things. And I'm not a small lady. I am a larger lady, as I have mentioned, because I would like The Rock to carry me.
always
back to the rock.
And I was really so pleased.
And I didn't notice it, actually. That wasn't what that character was for me at all. But what that character was for me was the insidious nature of evil, and the women in the background who prop up.
Well, this hit the whole after the initiation of Flip Zimmerman as Ron Stallworth's initiation, they literally open the doors and this flood of white women comes in, and it's such a brilliant, I was really pleased that there was such a good analogy of like white women are propping up white supremacy, you know, but and also then just failed on that.
But then also thing. You even yourself were like, and it was really lovely to see all types of white people in the KKK. So Felix's moronic friend is a fat white guy.
Yeah.
You didn't mention that.
No. Oh, no, it's because I don't like men.
But do you see what I mean?
But I did think that. Well, the thing was, I thought that and then went, no, that is not the point about him. The point about him is, but it's only when it was a lady and I'm a lady. And
part of it is because we are social justice warriors and we will fight all of the fights.
Yeah.
Especially
on the internet.
But for me, in this skin, the race fight, this is so much more important right now.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of that film.
Mm.
And where it's not like Get Out didn't make a point of those issues.
No.
It painted them for you. You didn't actually have to come to the conclusion that Rose was representing perfect white femininity and all that. This, I've had to come to those conclusions. Mm. God damn it. This is Scooby-Doo. I'm just taking off my mask and instead of an old theme park owner, I'm a white lady.
I think that's everything.
I think we've covered a lot.
Can we do a Shagley Mary though? Because we've made it quite heavy. Can we lighten it?
Do you want to lighten it up again?
Lighten it back up again?
I love Shagfling Mary.
Shagfling Mary?
Yeah.
Shagfling Mary. Felix?
Mm-hmm. Oh, you can't. Oh, I know the rules of Shagfling Mary. Carry on.
Felix? As portrayed in this film.
Yeah.
David Duke, as portrayed in this film. Their idiot friend. Portrayed in this film.
This is not even that. This is the worst.
There is no way to win this.
I do not know if this is.
So just lean in.
Yeah. Just put your
I have a better one for you in a minute, but this one first.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Shag.
And we're
Felix.
Not talking about the real. No. We're talking about as portrayed in this film.
Shag Felix and get rid.
Okay.
Once and gone, because I could not bear.
Right.
So he would end up with the iron on his head.
Okay.
Fling David Duke, because I think you could probably get, I don't know, you probably get, he wasn't rich in it, was he?
I don't know.
I was just saying, you could probably get a house out of it, but I don't know. No, but at least you wouldn't spend much time with him.
2 weeks.
2 weeks. Yeah, I could do 2 weeks.
All right.
And I'm going to say, you listen to my logic.
I'm listening.
Marry that horrible,
I wish you guys could see my face.
Hilarious friend who makes weird noises, and I've got that misophonia, so maybe not. But I think he would do whatever you tell him to.
Yeah.
Because he was doing what everybody told him to.
True.
And I think if you got him in the right place and just... And that would be tied to a chair in the kitchen.
Okay.
And just leave him there and tell him what to do.
Okay.
I think that would be handleable. But the others, I would I would murder that Felix. Oh, God, he was awful.
Okay.
Oh, he was horrific.
Okay.
Can I tell you my fun fact?
Sure.
That I did write down.
Okay.
I spent the whole of the film, or like most of the film, every time there was the sidekick policeman.
Yeah.
Going, he looks really familiar. Who does he look like? He looks really familiar. But I didn't do the thing in the cinema where I normally do it because it's sort of, you know, it's more serious. It's in a props. But.
Totes in a props.
Steve Buscemi's brother.
Interesting.
So I was like, oh, that's what, because I got home, IMDb'd it.
Yeah.
Because my phone had run out of battery.
Of course.
And yeah, Steve Buscemi's brother. That's why he looked like that.
So if this film taught us anything, it taught us.
Yeah.
That you can recognise Denzel Washington's voice from a thousand paces.
Yes.
Right. It taught us that Adam Driver is always weird looking.
Yeah. It taught us that any film is made better by a dance sequence. It taught us that we're not sure about Topher Grace.
Really, really
not
sure. We don't
know what to do with Topher Grace.
This film taught us that black people talk jive. And that you
are
fascinated by production company sequences.
Yes, I love a good eye dent.
Mm-hmm.
It taught us that we like a film if it's fake history, if we know it's fake history.
Yep.
We don't like to be fooled by fake history dressed up like real history. Yeah. It's taught me that I've come a very long way from thinking the police are the heroes as to thinking the police were probably not right.
And it taught me that race is more important than white.
And off of that point, exactly, it taught me that I'm a Scooby-Doo white lady.
Interesting. Thank you for listening.
Thank you very much for listening.
If this film taught us anything. And we'll see you next time.
See you next time.
Bye. Bye.